Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see? Pick up the mirror now, America. Go ahead, pick it up. What are you, afraid? It's just a mirror, America. What could it do to you except reflect your image? The Majority Report.
My name is Sam Cedar, and this is the Majority Report. From Madison to Tripoli, workers rising versus the plutocrats. And we are broadcasting in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City, as we always do. And that's right, folks. 100,000 people filling the streets of Madison, Wisconsin over the weekend. More protests lined up for this week, not just in Wisconsin, but in Ohio, in Michigan, in Indiana, hopefully in Idaho and across the country. We'll have links up at majority.fm if you want to be part of those protests. This is a movement that is gaining steam. Finally, people fighting back against the oncoming austerity, the shared sacrifice that we're going to have to participate in, which essentially involves the rich telling us you're going to have your pensions cut. You're going to have your collective bargaining powers stripped. You're going to have your retirement Social Security payments cut, and on and on and on. And what will be the shared sacrifice? What will be the sacrifice of those plutocrats? I can tell you right now, it will be nothing. Nothing. Before we move to Wisconsin, you have now 6 days, going into day 7 of anti-regime protests in Libya. In addition to the protests that we've seen in Bahrain and in Yemen. And in Libya, it is literally on fire. 500 people reportedly killed at this point in the protests. The military seems to be breaking up into tribal factions. And a speech last night, our time, by Saif al-Islam Gaddafi, which was reportedly pre-taped. I was listening to Al Jazeera for much of the evening, and there were claims that it was pre-taped almost 2 days ago. God knows what country he has. Maybe he is hanging out somewhere with Scott Walker and the Koch brothers. Maybe they're all in Galt Gulch. Maybe they've all gone to a compound somewhere in Colorado. They've locked the gates, and they're just waiting for all this to die down. Muammar Gaddafi's son, Saif al-Islam, addressed the people of Libya. In his speech, he blamed the unrest in Libya on tribal factions and drunken or drugged Islamists acting on their own agendas. He said the alternative to the reforms that Gaddafi is now claiming he's going to put in place is civil war. So you have this son of a despotic leader addressing people, telling them that it's just a bunch of freakos, probably on drugs, that are protesting. And if you don't calm down, it's going to be civil war. My, how despots and crazy puppets of the plutocrats seem to all get their talking points from the same place. Let's go to Wisconsin, Madison, where nearly 400 Tea Partiers showed up with their leader to counter-protest the 100,000 people who filled the streets of Madison this weekend. And here is their leader, Andrew Breitbart, sounding a lot like Saif al-Islam Gaddafi.
If your movement is so sacred, why are anarchists central to it? Why is it that the anarchists did away with burning down Rick Perry's governor's mansion 2 years ago? Why is it the anarchists get to get away with their organization of trying to bomb the Republican National Convention and the mainstream media doesn't report it, yet the Tea Party is guilty until it proves itself innocent on charges of racism, sexism, homophobia, being anti-gummy bears, being anti the man on the moon. We're inherently evil. Yet in 2 years, the Tea Party has been the most peaceful, patriotic group. Trying to get you to be provoked to do something violent. The only thing they've caught you on tape doing with all these thousands of cameras is picking up after yourselves. This is an existential battle. It's the battle of our time. I'm sorry, but I consider this to be an electronic civil war in which the mainstream media has taken its side.
There he is, saying that we're engaged now in a civil war and that it's anarchists who are involved in these protests in Madison. And then, of course, there's the classic conservative whining and crying that people are treating us unfairly. They're treating us unfairly. The mainstream media won't report on us. I am sure there were more God-hate-fags protesters there than at Andrew Breitbart's rally. There were more free pizzas donated from the Middle East to people in Madison, Wisconsin, than there were Tea Partiers in their counter-protest that Andrew Breitbart flew out there to lead. And yet he whines and he cries, all because he couldn't be as famous as his neighbors at his Brentwood High School and junior high. Why are they all famous and hanging out in clubs with no name on their door? Why am I out here trying to hawk fake videos? It's not fair. It's not fair. The anarchists have taken over. And we're engaged in a civil war. And now here's Saif al-Islam Gaddafi to give us the benediction as we take his private jet to Galt Gulch. And more and more is coming out on how this entire Wisconsin budget crisis was ginned up. And more is coming out how the measures that Scott Walker and the Republicans in the Wisconsin state legislature. And look, this applies to what's going to happen in Ohio. This applies to what's happening in Indiana. Across the board, we're seeing this across the country. Right-wing governors taking this opportunity to crush unions because they have been told to do so by their paymasters. And in just a few moments, we're going to talk to Adelaide Stan of Alternate just about who those paymasters are. 100,000 people in the square yesterday in Madison, Wisconsin. You've got 65% of Wisconsin residents that think Walker has gone too far on his attack on public employees. And according to Mike Elk, a union organizer in Washington, D.C., he says the key thing to watch is whether protests will grow enough to stop Walker from giving his scheduled budget address on Tuesday. Walker is attempting to move the speech to a location outside the state legislature building. Do you see this? This is like his moving to Sharm el-Sheikh. Why is he afraid to deliver his budget speech outside the state legislature building, which, according to Mike Elk, could be potentially in violation of the state law? I'm sure it's not a major law, but that's where the speech is supposed to be had. But, of course, you can't do that if you have hundreds of thousands of people in your state protesting outside there. Why doesn't he simply call the National Guard? Walker has also announced that he won't even present his actual budget till a week later, but just give a speech. Ostensibly, this is going to be one about shared sacrifice. We all have to tighten our belts. Not the rich people I gave $124 million worth of tax breaks to less than a month ago. They don't have to tighten their belt. But maybe their accountants might, because they might not have as much time to bill to find loopholes out of those taxes. Something like two-thirds of the corporations in Wisconsin don't even pay any taxes whatsoever. And so you have the state senators, Democratic state senators, attempting to essentially filibuster this vote that the Republicans want to quickly and hurriedly and attempted to rush through to the point where they didn't announce it to members of the assembly. They brought it up basically in the dark of the night and then dropped it on everybody with very little notice. And so these, I guess, 14 or so Democratic senators left the state. It's the only way they could filibuster this bill. Is this unprecedented? Are these anarchists, as Andrew Breitbart would have you say? Are they drunken, drugged Islamists, as Saif al-Islam Gaddafi would call them? Well, actually, this is a fairly precedented move. Apparently, Abraham Lincoln did the same thing in the Capitol in Springfield, Illinois, 170 years ago, via a window. There was some deal where the then Democrats at that time wanted to allow the state bank to suspend its obligations to exchange its paper money for specie, but only for the remainder of the legislative session. That's when Lincoln determined to keep the legislative session open to buy precious time for the bank to find a way to survive. He jumped out a window to prevent quorum from existing. Apparently not successful. Maybe he wasn't fast enough. But there's been at least four occasions of blocking quorum in Wisconsin's legislature alone. One representative in 1951, Ruth Doyle, had to be retrieved from the women's bathroom for a vote on a resolution for the legislature to hear General Douglas MacArthur speak. I mean, so this has been attempted and successful in the past, and hopefully these Democratic senators, state senators in Wisconsin, are able to hold out. And to buy enough time for more protests, there's a good chance people in Wisconsin are going to lose this battle. And they're going to have to move on to trying to recall. I think there's about eight Republican legislators who can be recalled within 60 days. And if you check out actblute.org, you can find places to donate money to this effort. Walker cannot be recalled until January of 2012, is my understanding. So then the question is, are we looking at a budget crisis in Wisconsin? And are state employees responsible for this crisis? The answer is clearly no. The Center for Budget and Policy Priorities did a study of the 13 non-collective bargaining states, states that do not allow their workers to collectively bargain. Three of them three of the 13 non-collective bargaining states are among the 11 states facing budget shortfalls at or above 20%. Texas, Louisiana, and North Carolina. Another, South Carolina, comes in at 17.4% of a budget shortfall. Nevada, where state employees have no collective bargaining rights, but local employees do, has the largest percentage shortfall in the country at 45.2%. In all, eight non-collective bargaining states face larger budget shortfalls than either Wisconsin or Ohio. This is from Ed Kilgore, a former DLCer. Not exactly a screaming anarchist by any stretch of the imagination. An agenda of budget-busting public employees, he writes, of busting public employee unions does not appear to be any sort of budgetary silver bullet. Instead, should be just as understood as representing the ancient conservative hostility to unions and workers' rights generally, with fiscal problems, real or manufactured, just serving as a fresh excuse to grind this particular ideological axe and wage class warfare. Class warfare is already being waged. The middle class, the upper middle class, poor people are all losing. And this is simply the latest front. This is simply some of the nails they want to place on the coffin. Now, these millionaire state employees in Wisconsin, how much are they making? According to David K. Johnson, a Wisconsin state employee gets, on average, $24,500 a year. For a pension, I should say. $24,500 a year. That's not a huge pension. You're not going out buying fur-lined sinks with that. You're not jetting off to Davos on your pension that you get from the Wisconsin, from the state of the Wisconsin. Now, you should also know, according to him, that 15% of the money going into the Wisconsin state pension, what does that pay for? Wall Street to manage the money. 15%. That's stunning. And apparently, they haven't done such a great job. Do you think they're getting 17, 20% returns? So there's a 5 percentage point upside to that? Ezra Klein looks at the question, are Wisconsin state and local workers overpaid? The Economic Policy Institute conducted a study comparing total compensation, that is to say wages and health care benefits and pensions, among public and private workers in Wisconsin. To get an apples-to-apples comparison, the study's author controlled for experience, organizational size, gender, race, ethnicity, citizenship, and disability, and then sorted the results by education. Quote, Wisconsin public sector workers face an annual compensation penalty of 11%. In other words, they're 11% underpaid. That includes their pension and health care. Adjusting for the slightly fewer hours worked per week on average, these public workers still face a compensation penalty of 5% for choosing to work in the public sector. Klein goes on to say, the deal that union, state government, and by extension state residents have made to defer the compensation of public employees via pension obligations. I've used the description many times. I will pay Evan and Dorsey $4 a day now instead of paying them their deserved rate of $6 a day. And I will put $1 into a pension account that they will get 30 years. And so it'll be like they made $7 a day or $8 a day. But Ezra Klein says the deal that was made was a bad deal for the public employees, not the state government. State and local governments have been able to hire better workers and get more work out of them by negotiating contracts that they might not follow through on. The ones who got played here are the public employees, not the residents of the various states. There's been a lot of concern lately that states or municipalities will default on their debt. This is considered the height of fiscal responsibility because, of course, bondholders will pay the price. But he goes on to say that, but the talk that the states or cities will default on their obligations to teachers or DMV employees, that's considered evidence of fiscal responsibility. Public employees have become less sympathetic than banks, and that happened because of an onslaught of conservative and right-wing BS talking points carried by Joe Scarborough in the morning, carried by Rush Limbaugh in the afternoon, carried by Glenn Beck in the evening, and funded by millions upon millions of hundreds of millions of dollars by people like the Koch brothers. When we come back, we'll talk to Adelaide Stan. She will outline just how those efforts are supported by these right-wing plutocrats. We'll be right back. Back, Sam Seder on the Majority Report. On the phone, Alternet's Washington Bureau Chief and co-editor with Don Hazen of the book Dangerous Brew, Exposing the Tea Party's Agenda to Take Over America. Adele Stan, welcome to the program, Adele.
Thanks so much for having me, Sam.
So what we're seeing in Wisconsin is part and parcel of the Tea Party's agenda to take over America, and they're doing it, it would appear, on behalf of their plutocrat funders.
It does look that way, doesn't it? I mean, Wisconsin, you know, as I call it, is the Midwest frontier province of Kokistan. Wisconsin has been really overrun by the Koch-funded group Americans for Prosperity, and nearly every Republican politician in or from Wisconsin is really in the pockets of the Kochs, from Governor Walker to Paul Ryan in Congress, who heads the House Budget Committee. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And now Rince Priebus, who is the chair of the Republican National Committee, he actually worked with Americans for Prosperity in Milwaukee to suppress the votes of African Americans and college students in the last midterm elections.
So when we talk about them being in the pocket of these people, it's not so much that these guys were all were worker friendly before they entered into politics. It just so happens that these people rise to the top because they're the ones who receive all this money to support their right wing vision of a state, of a country that involves no capacity for workers to organize, no capacity or no reason for states and municipalities and, frankly, the federal government to meet its obligations, its promises to workers and retirees.
That's exactly right. I mean, and we should be careful when we say that they receive money. I mean, really what they're getting is a lot of what we would think of more as in-kind kind of support, where Americans for Prosperity will, you know, gather people together, busloads of people to turn up at their rallies and that sort of thing. But that's exactly right. I mean, you're right. These people were not worker-friendly to begin with, and that's why they've earned their rewards via, you know, this Koch-funded AstroTurf group. And some of them get direct contributions, you know, at the maximum allowable from Koch Industries themselves. And it's important to know that, you know, Wisconsin has at least 17 Koch Industries facilities in Wisconsin, including 4,000 miles of pipeline. Koch is, rooted in the gas, natural gas and oil sector.
That's wonderful. So while they're also keeping our state workers in Wisconsin from being able to collectively bargain their hydrofracking and dumping diesel fuel into our water supply.
That's correct. And I think it's very important for your listeners to understand that as much as this is an attack on public workers, it's not just about that. It's not even just about shrinking the size of government. It's about breaking the unions, because the unions are the organizational capacity for Democratic candidates. And most unions, of course, much greater union penetration these days is in the public sector than in the private sector. So this is really about trying to break the unions, period.
And, I mean, this has been an ongoing agenda. Let me ask you this. You know, the Koch brothers seem to really have moved into the fore over the past, I don't know, 4 or 5 years.
That's correct.
And maybe that's just simply a function of, I mean, they've always been out there spending. I mean, one of the brothers basically bought his way onto the Libertarian ticket, I think, back in 1980s.
That's right. David Koch was the presidential candidate. And they have been spending money for decades supporting, I don't know what you would call them. I mean, presumed respectable institutions such as the Cato Institute and the American Enterprise Institute and these sort of neo-libertarian think tanks. So they've been spending for decades, and really they're since the days of their dad, who was a founding member of the John Birch Society.
And so what now? Where are the other big right-wing funders? Have they basically just said, we don't need to do this as much anymore because the Koch brothers, or is it just that the Koch brothers just have so much money now that they're flooding the zone?
They are the prime movers, as it were, you know. Just about any major right-wing institution, much of the funding is led by the Kochs, but you still have, the Bradley Foundation and some of the old line cores is still out there. The big funders of the religious right, they are still out there. But the Kochs, such is their arrogance that they are surprised by the profile that they now have as funders of the right vis-a-vis the Tea Party. I mean, David Koch has been denying, as he denied to Jane Mayer in her New Yorker piece, that, you know, he's ever funded the Tea Party. But, of course, Americans for Prosperity is one of the big, big organizers of the Tea Party movement, as is FreedomWorks. Now, FreedomWorks was founded with Koch money. Both Koch and FreedomWorks contend that FreedomWorks no longer receives Koch money. But, I mean, they do have investments that, you know, pay dividends, and those investments likely came from, you know, the Kochs.
And we know that their money goes to things like the Heritage Foundation and the Cato Institute, which all advertise on entities like right-wing talk radio and... so this really, there really is a multiplier effect on these Koch brother dollars.
There really is, and if you factor in the alliance between Koch and Rupert Murdoch, then you get a really crazy exponential effect. I mean, Americans for Prosperity is very well represented on the airwaves of Fox. And Fox and Americans for Prosperity worked very closely together to push Van Jones out of the White House. Mm-hmm. The Vice President for Policy of Americans for Prosperity has a column on Fox News's website and is a frequent contributor to Fox News.
And so what happens now? I mean, there's every reason to believe that despite the hundreds of thousands of people that have showed up over the past week and are projected to continue to show up,
right,
that there's a good chance the people are going to lose this fight in the short run. How do we deal with this type of onslaught of money? I mean, particularly in light of Citizens United.
That's right.
And particularly in light of the fact that as they spend money, like you say, to essentially neuter unions, they also gain electoral strength because of they're weakening the infrastructure of any type of organization that could carry a message for average people.
I think that's right. And I think, you know, I think this is one of the institutional weaknesses of the left of center and of the Democratic Party, in that kind of all the eggs are in one basket, in terms of the Go TV, get out the vote efforts. And I think one of the things that we really, you know, progressives really need to be looking at is not simply the base, which you need to nurture and take care of, you know, but also to be looking at swing voters and coming up, you know, and really articulating a narrative about what is at stake for regular people who do not belong to unions. And I too often, you know, these battles are couched in these very narrow terms. So many people don't belong to unions that, and there's not often, you know, a natural sympathy toward unionized workers who appear to get a better deal than folks, in, you know, working in the private sector. That, I mean, it's really incumbent upon progressives to make the case for why this is critical to the well-being of regular people, and to do so in swing districts, and to do so in areas, you know, in the suburbs, in places where people can, you know, kind of vote either way.
But Adele, you know, what institution are you talking about? I mean, because, you know, you're suggesting that there should be somebody making a broader case to these people in the middle, or
right?
And what institution can exist from year to year that could actually mobilize these people, that could actually speak to these people? I mean, we don't have the natural incentive for billionaires to fund these type of organizations. I mean, you cannot go to a Tea Party rally or a Glenn Beck rally without seeing thousands upon thousands of people who are bussed there by the AFP.
There cannot
be a left-wing version of the AFP, because there isn't a billionaire out there, you know, God bless Soros, but he's just not willing to fund in the same way to get massive amounts of people out there at a drop of a hat, because, frankly, at the end of the day, it's not a good money investment.
Well, yes, but right there, what you're saying, I think it speaks to a sort of a shortcoming in the progressive thought process, is that it's not that we need to be doing to mirror exactly what they are up to, but we could be funding infrastructure that that got liberal opinion onto the newspaper op-ed pages of, you know, papers that appear in these districts where there is none, because they use syndicated columnists, and most syndicated columnists are right-wing. We could build some of that infrastructure. That might be something that a Soros or, you know, a wealthy progressive donor could be convinced that, you know, we need some new institutions that can do those kinds of things. We don't need to mirror exactly what the right is doing. We need to build our own countervailing infrastructure.
But isn't the right, what they have done, is simply mirror unions? I mean, they have unions are a built-in institution that exists, that address a need, and then also, in fact, impact people as much as an op-ed in their newspaper. I mean, you've got so-called liberals like Joe Klein who were bashing this union, bashing it. I mean, as aggressive as any supposed right-winger. And the problem with what you're suggesting, that we create – we look for more liberal money to fund think tanks and whatnot, is that at the end of the day, those type of establishments, frankly, seem in these instances to side with big money.
But they don't have to. They don't have to. You know, if the donor, if the person who's giving up the dough, you know, insists on a different attack, it can and is willing to fund it, it can happen. I mean, Sam, you know, I we certainly need to do everything we can to make sure the unions survive and that collective bargaining succeeds. You know, I have a background in labor myself, and I worked for the American Federation of Government Employees for 4 years during the battle for TSA collective bargaining rights. And I mean, I'm very passionate about that. But I'm also equally passionate about building, you know, media infrastructure that work in the way where, you know, an op-ed piece is not just an op-ed piece. A smart institution then takes that op-ed and leverages it into the local broadcast media market and eventually to national media market. In other words, what I'm saying is we need to be building these, you know, these institutions that, you know, where do you think all of these talking heads on the right come from?
Oh, yes. No, I mean, I agree. I agree with that. And I certainly, believe me, I certainly would love to see more funding of left-wing media. Believe me, I can assure you. At the end of the day, I think, though, you know, unions remain our best hope and our last hope at organizing people on the ground.
Well, I think that's true. I'm not suggesting it's not. I'm saying it's not enough.
Yeah, well, that I would agree with. And hopefully there are some very wealthy liberal versions of the Koch brothers out there who are willing to invest these hundreds of millions of dollars without any real financial return. I mean, that's my biggest concern, is that at the end of the day, the Koch brothers, they're going to get a return on this.
That's exactly right.
Not just
and, that's,
an ideological
and that is the distinction between them and Soros.
Yep.
You know, that's the and the same thing with Murdoch. These
yep.
two guys are hell bent on this completely deregulatory agenda for a very good reason, and it's to enrich their heirs.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly. And yeah. They're good. So far, they're doing pretty good.
They are. They are doing really well, but we really need to take, to take some hope from what we're seeing in Wisconsin. Yes, this battle may wind up, you know, being lost. I mean, how long can the Democrats in the state Senate stay in Illinois or wherever they are? We need to take some spark from what we're seeing in Wisconsin and figure out how to harness that energy and how to plead that case elsewhere in the nation. It is our only hope, and we are really up against it in the wake of Citizens United. But I mean, we can't give up this fight.
Absolutely right. Adele Stan, the alternate Washington Bureau Chief and co-editor with Don Hazen of the book Dangerous Brew, Exposing the Tea Party's Agenda to Take Over America. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Sam.
All right, we got to take a break, folks. We'll be right back after this brief interlude. And we got a couple more stories before we go to our flip side. A couple of bonus minutes on the first day of our sequestering. Is that right, Evan?
That's correct.
All right, we'll be right back after this. Couple more bonus moment. Couple more bonus minutes. So the UK Foreign Secretary has announced, ladies and gentlemen, that Andrew Breitbart is headed to where? Venezuela? Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. Gaddafi. Is it Gaddafi or his son?
It said Gaddafi.
Oh, really? So Gaddafi is headed to Venezuela.
Wow.
Now, he's not fleeing the country, is he? He's just taking a trip. It's like the functional equivalent of Breitbart going like, I'm not leaving Brentwood. I'm just going to Cabo for a couple of days. I'm going to hang out in Cabo and drink some brews.
He said that he has no information that he is in Venezuela, but I have some information that suggests he is on the way
there
at the moment.
That would be the flight manifesto, I think we're looking at. So let's get into this a little bit more before we go to the members only. And I should tell you, folks, once you become a member, you will have access to the rest of this show, at least for a couple of weeks, right? Or is it live forever? I'm not sure about that. How long our archives are up. I think they go for a long time, actually. And you can also buy something at Just Coffee. And listen, folks, I don't care how many Twitter followers you have. If you have one Twitter follower or 10 Twitter followers or 10,000, if you go to donateyouraccount.com/MajorityFM and donate your account to us, one tweet a day, one tweet a week, one tweet a month, it helps. And of course, those of you who have been buying stuff on Amazon, I know I got a tweet the other day. Somebody said, I just bought some stuff on Amazon. Stop pimping it so much. Well, I've only said it once today, but we need your support. I don't necessarily subscribe to the notion that progressive, liberal, leftist victory lies in more left-wing think tanks. I just don't think it's as likely as rebuilding unions, frankly. I would love it. I certainly would love it. Put me first in line to get some funding from that billionaire who is willing to have me go on the air and tell people how I think that billionaires as a class should be embarrassed when they walk outside. They should be embarrassed. They should be shamed. They should be ashamed, and they should be shamed. This plutocracy that we have in this country, nay, the world. 88 global protests last week. 88 global protests. Dorsey, did you get that map I sent you?
I did. I didn't have time to open it, though. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Well, post that.
Okay.
It's pretty impressive. Meanwhile, it's the support for workers in Madison is far ranging and reaching, and support for the protesters. Law enforcement put out a press release on behalf of all the law enforcement agencies that helped keep the peace on Capitol Square Saturday. A very sincere thank you to all those who showed up to exercise their First Amendment rights. You conducted yourselves with great decorum and civility. The eyes of the nation were upon Wisconsin, and you have shown how democracy can flourish even amongst those who passionately disagree. As of 5 p.m., no major incidents had been reported. There have been no arrests. Over 100,000 protesters, no arrests. This was not a Glenn Beck rally. The president of the Greater Madison Chamber of Commerce sent out an email to its members in part saying, we support the work to address the state budget deficit and efforts towards improving the state economy. That support ends at the adversarial way elected officials are approaching it. Public policy issues of this magnitude should not be rushed through the legislative process. Given the state's long history of collective bargaining, policy changes of this magnitude should only be should be thoroughly debated for adequate period of time in good faith by both sides, with all potential consequences considered. Currently, that is not happening. Law enforcement official, law enforcement association official, regrets a Walker endorsement. Tracy Fuller, executive board president of the Wisconsin Law Enforcement Association, says in a statement on the association's website that he regrets the endorsement by the Wisconsin Troopers Association of Governor Scott Walker. Remember, this is a group that has been sequestered, to use one of my favorite words now, from this destruction of collective bargaining. The cops, the troopers, the EMTs, and the firemen. And I say firemen, because you understand that all those groups are probably over, or probably range in somewhere from 75 to 80, 95% male, those unions. The teachers, the nurses, social workers, majority women's unions. I don't know what that means. But the law enforcement union's members were not included in Walker's assault on jobs and collective bargaining rights. And Fuller says he regrets being the recipient of any perceived benefits provided by the governor's anointing. Fuller goes on to say, I value all the agencies around the state. I don't know how any of us could function without any of us around the state. We all need each other. I think everyone's job and career is just as significant as the others. Everyone's family is just as valuable as mine or any other person's. Everyone's needs are just as valuable. And this, coming from across the pond, Kamal Abbas from Cairo has this to say.
أتحدث إليكم من مكان قريب جدا من ميدان التحرير ميدان التحرير الذي كان قلب الثورة النابض ميدان التحرير الذي دفع كثيرا من الشباب المصري.
Now, from what I can tell, he's saying, I'm speaking to you close from a place very close to Tahrir Square in Cairo, Liberation Square, which is the heart of the revolution in Egypt. This is the place where many of our youth paid with their lives and blood in the struggle for our just rights. From this place, I want you to know that we stand with you as you stood with us. I want you to know that no power can challenge the will of the people when they believe in their right. When they raise their voices loud and clear and struggle against exploitation, no one believed that our revolution could succeed against the strongest dictatorship in the region. But in 18 days, the revolution achieved the victory of the people. When the working class of Egypt joined the revolution on 9 and 10th of February, the dictatorship was doomed, and the victory of the people became inevitable. We want you to know that we stand on your side. Stand firm and don't waver. Don't give up on your rights. Victory always belongs to the people who stand firm and demand their just rights. Today is the day of the American workers. We salute you, American workers. You will be victorious. Victory belongs to all the people of the world who are fighting against exploitation and for their just rights. From Tahrir Square. And what are we facing in this country? This is David Gregory from Meet the Press this weekend, talking about Chris Christie's plan to gut Social Security. And how, are you ready for this, folks? This is what people want to hear.
Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey, talk about austerity. He gave a speech here in Washington this week that got rave reviews in part because of his plain language about taking on issues.
Who gave this rave reviews? Who gave this rave reviews? Who? Chris Christie would lose in a matchup to Barack Obama in his own state by 20 points. Who gave him great reviews? Back it up. Can you back it up just a little bit? All right, play.
Christie of New Jersey, talk about austerity. He gave a speech here in Washington this week that got rave reviews in part because of his plain language about taking on issues like Social Security. Here's what he said.
You're going to have to raise the retirement age for Social Security. Ho-ho, I just said it, and I'm still standing here. I did not vaporize into the carpeting. And I said it.
He didn't vaporize into the garbage. I mean, this is the kind of plain talk that people are responding to. And yet, you just heard from Senator Durbin, you know, they want to take Social Security off the table right now in terms of dealing with debt reduction.
Now, aside from the fact that there's absolutely zero evidence that people, in quotations, are responding to his plain language. Did you hear the laughter? How many of those people that laughed, David Gregory, or the people in that room, press when he gave that speech, how many of them do you think are in the 60th, the 60% of Americans, the 60% of Americans who rely on Social Security for more than 50% of their retirement income? How many people in that room who laughed when the fat guy, because the fat guys are always funny, when the fat guy made the joke that he hasn't evaporated because he's talking about screwing over retirees? How many of the people that laughed, how many of the people on that show that laughed afterwards, who gave him rave reviews, who loved his plain talk, how many of them are in the majority of Americans who get the majority of their income in retirement from Social Security. A big, juicy, fat zero would be the answer that I would give. All right, folks, please join me on the flip side. If you're listening live, you can certainly hear this show, and I am me at Majority FM. If you are one of the thousands who listen to this podcast on a daily basis and have not become a member, I must wish you adieu, a fond adieu. But in the future, you can always hear what's going to happen next. And believe me, it's going to be unbelievable. If you become a member at majority.fm, don't forget to buy some coffee at justcoffee.coop. Catch you on the flip side.